Okay. So today is June 30th, 2017. This is an interview for the New Bedford Fishing Heritage Center, funded by an Archie Green Fellowship from the Library of Congress. As part of this project, we're interviewing shoreside workers in the New Bedford Fairhaven fishing industry to record their stories, document their skills and knowledge, and better understand their important role in the fishing industry. The recording and transcript will become part of the permanent collection at the Library of Congress. I'm Fred Calabretta, and today I'm speaking with Phil Mello at Burgee's Seafood in New Bedford. And do you give us your permission to record this?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Just to start, your full name?
My name is Philip Mello, two L's in both names.
Okay. And date and place of birth?
February 1st, 1953, here in New Bedford.
Okay. And grew up in New Bedford?
Fairhaven.
Fairhaven?
Yeah.
Okay. And your family, did your family have any ties to the fishing industry?
None whatsoever.
Okay. And had your family been in this area for a long time?
Yes. My great-grandfather immigrated from St. Michael the Azores in 1902 on my mom's side of the family. And then probably in the mid-50s or so, my father's mother and father came over. So, but you know, I'm born here.
And let's see. Now, how did you first get involved in the fishing industry?
Well, back in 1975, I was a marine electronic technician. I installed radios, radars, and on commercial fishing vessels. And at one point, the company I worked for went out of business. I took up a job on a tugboat, working for a couple of years for a local tug. And in 1980, Tishon Seafood called me looking for an assistant foreman to help out with the different jobs in the plant. So I took that job in 1980. I was there until 92. I worked my way up from an assistant foreman to a foreman to a salesman in the office and a fish buyer eventually. And I used to go to the fish auctions and buy the fish and come back to the plant and supervise all the workings. And in 1992, I moved here to Burgee's.
Now, at the first position, was that that business located somewhere near here?
Yes, it's two houses down here, two doors down.
And how did you learn? Were there certain guys that really kind of...
Basically, you just watched and learned. I mean, I knew nothing about seafood. At the time, I knew there was cod and I knew there was flounders, but I didn't know all the different species of them, of the flounder anyway. So I, worked closely with people there and just learned that way.
And then you started here after, you said...
1992.
1992. And what were you doing when you first started here? What were your responsibilities?
I'm basically the general manager. I would order the fish, get the orders from the customers, coordinate packaging. We started, cutting the fish. We're a very small plant when we first started. We were down in the north terminal in a small little rental building. And I had maybe three cutters and not much machinery. We did a lot of things by hand. We had a skinning machine, thank goodness, for the fillets. So we had a small operation there, and eventually moved into this building here, which I have 12 cutters now, and fish cutting machines is much bigger than when we first started.
Now, and when you first started and continuing today, so the business is basically a fish wholesale business?
Yes. We sell wholesales that in turn sell restaurants. We do have some national chains store chains that buy from us, and some larger restaurant chains that buy direct. But primarily, we ship to wholesalers.
And so it sounds like, from early on in your career, you're dealing with buyers, but you're also dealing with the fishermen. Is that right?
Yes. So when we would buy at the auction, it would be a competitive situation, and once the fish was bought, the captain and the whole crew would come over. That's back when they had the old city auction. So, but when you're buying from the boats directly, like we do, the fishermen do come in here. We interact with them.
So some of the fish is coming here directly, being offloaded right here at your facility, and then some of it is purchased through the auction.
That is correct.
And what's the balance, roughly?
It's tough to say. It all depends what time of year. Yesterday we had three boats, and today we had two scallopers. The other three boats were draggers. And we might go like 3 or 4 days without anything, 4 days without anything. So every day we buy from the auction, even if we have a boat we don't. So it's just really, it's tough to say a ratio because it's always changing. And the weather has a lot to do with it.
Now the boats that do offload here, is that, what kind of an arrangement is it? Is it like a contract arrangement or is it more informal or?
Okay, basically the fishermen like to keep things a secret. So if one particular fisherman's fishing the northern part of Georgia's, let's say, you can go out in a boat and be out there for quite some time, never see anybody. You can talk to them on the radio. So basically they know where you are, kind of. So when he comes to me and he offloads, nobody really knows what he has. If he goes on the auction, they're going to see, wow, look, Joe caught all this stuff. He was up to the northern. Let's pay. And they get on satellite phones and call their other boats that are out there, and they'll try to move to the area where that man was fishing. So a lot of them come here for that reason. Another reason is with the auction system, everything's dropped by pallets. So in other words, there's different lots. There's a 1,500-pound lot, a 500-pound lot. So those go for different prices. And sometimes the fishermen get upset because they'll have one pallet that gets a dollar and a quarter, let's say, per pound. And then the next pallet right next to it gets a dollar 10 a pound. So they feel they should get the dollar 25. So we pay the boat the average board price. So not the high, not the low. And if there's like day boats in there that mess up the costing, the captains of the boat understand that's not the same fish he has. So, but they seem to be very happy with the arrangement. I don't know how many boats exactly, but we have a good sum of boats that come here and offload.
And the prices change every day?
Yes.
And then to determine like today's prices, that's based on the auction this morning?
That's correct.
And then how does that information get to you?
Well, we are a buyer in the auction. So as we buy fish, we print up what we purchased. We print up the board average, which everybody has the privilege to do that. And so you see what the board average is right there.
And does it jump around a lot based on supply and demand?
Yeah. Today, unfortunately, one boat got paid 15 cents for his snapper haddock. Just a lot of fish around going into the 4th of July week holiday. It's not big fish week.
And there's a pretty interesting jump between what the fishermen are getting and then the retail prices you see at markets.
If it goes through a couple of people, everybody tags on a little something. And I believe what the fish markets do is they have X amount, and say like they bought 10 pounds and they put it out for 2 or 3 days, and then it's either have to be frozen, sold at a less value, or discarded. So they kind of figure that in the price, I think, a little bit too. So that if there's any discard, it's taken care of.
Yeah. And it seems like thinking about the nature of the business, I mean, you're dealing with something that's perishable. So does that sort of affect the pace? If you offload hardware in a warehouse, you can let it sit for a month, but you can't do that with fish.
Fish isn't wine. It doesn't get better with age.
Yeah.
It's very stressful at times to try to get the product out of here, try to make a buck at it. We can buy fish and not realize what's coming in the next day. And so if I have 20,000 pounds of haddock here and I paid, let's say, a dollar and a quarter for it, and then there's double that amount in the bed for tomorrow or coming down from Canada, the price is going to drop. So you want to really work hard to get the product out.
Yeah. So the seems like that sort of unpredictability of it must make things tough or complicated. I mean,
it is. Years ago, when there was plenty of fish around, you could talk to different companies and work out sales and specials. And today, with the government restrictions, where they can fish, where they can't fish, the weather, it fluctuates very, very up and down. Like, it's very, very fluctuating.
And are the ups and downs a lot more seasonal now with the restrictions?
Well, certain times
of year, busier or slower.
Yeah, well, if the weather's nice, the boats are fishing, and they're bringing in a lot of weight. So, the prices sometimes stay a little more stable here, but in the wintertime, they, It all depends on the weather and the supply coming in.
Yeah. I mean, what tends to be your busiest period?
My busiest time is probably this start spring right through fall. All the different restaurants open up on the East Coast, up and down, and like from the Jersey Shore all the way down to Cape Cod, up to Maine. So there's this big demand for seafood, and we like sell those people that sell the restaurants.
Yeah. Now, when you first started here at Burgee's, where were most of your buyers located?
On the same areas. We have Fulton Fish Market now. It's called the Hunts Point Market in New York. The Philadelphia Market. Used to be on South Street, but it just moved. We have the Boston Market up in Boston, different distributors up there. And then globally, we sell to Japan in the fall, monkfish livers, skate wings and monks into France and Spain.
And then what's your involvement with the shipping side of it, or working with shippers?
Well, we're kind of a small shop here, so everybody takes this. We work as a team. So when the orders come up, they're printed, and a master sheet goes down to the floor so they know how to start preparing the product. So when the plant's running, you might be starting off with some flounders and all of a sudden you get a big cod order, so you have to shut the flounder production down and start on the cod because that truck's going to leave first, or vice versa. So after the paperwork comes upstairs, we set it into which truck's going to pick it up. We do the shipping to make sure we do the case count, give it to the driver. They check the case count. Truck gets loaded and gets out of town. So everybody shares the same responsibilities.
Yeah. So is there any such thing as a typical day? I mean, could you describe one? Like, say, describe what you did yesterday, maybe.
It's nothing's typical. Every day's different. Yesterday, we had a few boats, and around the clock, the guys are just working. When I came in this morning, my workers have been here for 24 hours, offloading boats. So it's like they're all walking around like zombies. So yesterday was just offloading the boats, getting fish from the auction. We bought fish from the Gloucester auction. We needed that to be delivered to New Bedford in a timely fashion so we could start processing it to get it out of town. Then all of a sudden half that fish didn't show up on that truck for some reason, and then it's just now you got to call the customers back and tell them you don't have anything, and it's that was kind of crazy.
Do you need to check on that?
No. Okay. I was gonna tell her she can come into the room, but
so it just seems like it can get pretty hectic. I mean that boats are coming and going, buyers are coming and going, trucks are coming and going, and all of it is tough to schedule because it just changes constantly. Yeah. I mean, does it ever drive you crazy?
Oh, a lot. But you just, it is what it is. You just get through it. It's a living. You just do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're slower than others, but most of the time it's pretty hectic.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people have trouble dealing with sort of an uncertain situation like that that's constantly changing. A lot of people like to know what they're going to be doing that day, and but that seems like in this business,
I come in, my feet don't hit the ground, just run all day. Yeah. Between once you participate in the auction, I would have to come upstairs to my office, figure out what my inventory was from yesterday, figure out the new costing for the fish, figure out what the yield was yesterday, because the yield can vary where the boat's fish. An offshore yellowtail right now is yielding anywhere from 36 to 38%. That's good meat. So if I cut 100 pounds, I would get 36 pounds of fillets, let's say. Well, the inshore yellowtails, which are very fresh product, I'm only getting a 29% yield on those because it's just different area where they eat and whatever. So when I come upstairs, I have to keep that in mind. I have to check to see what I got yesterday, because if I got a better yield and I got a lot of fish, I want to price competitively. I don't want to price off the wrong yield, and all of a sudden I found out I got a terrible yield yesterday. So that's part of it. Then I have two other salesmen, actually three other salesmen that work with us, one downstairs and two upstairs. And we go over all the pricing. We send out an email out to all the customers about the pricing, and then we start getting on the phones.
So there's a lot of detail.
Excuse me.
And what's a normal schedule for you a week? I mean, what days and hours?
Well, when I first started working here, I was told I only had to work a half a day, so I took the job. But I didn't know they meant 12 hours. So my typical day is usually a 10 to 12 hour day. Up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, as I'm getting a little older, I'm not doing that. So I work an 8 hour shift. So I come in at 5:30 and work until like 1:30, 2 o'clock. But our plant is open 24 hours a day. So there's always something to do. There's a phone, always a phone call you're getting, you know, always a little problem.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're not here, it's not unusual for you to have to be on the phone or...
Yes, that's correct. Well, see, the processing end will shut down, but the offloading side is always open. So the offloaders may be calling and say they need something, or the owner of the company will say, you know, give so-and-so a call in New York and tell him I have this coming, how many does he want, that sort of thing. So even if it's a Saturday or Sunday, we still communicate. We have phone numbers to connect to the buyers at any time.
And how has the business changed? What are the biggest changes since you first started here?
Well, when I first started at Tishon's, they were a very large company, and they would have 4 boats a day. They normally buy 4 boats at the auction, and we would have 75,000 pounds or 100,000 pounds per boat. I mean, it was just a tremendous amount of fish back then. And you worked, and all of a sudden, 4 o'clock, and everybody was done, and you left. Now the average boats have 20,000 pounds, and it strings you up all day because there's not that many people anymore that work the industry. It's been always changing. The regulations have been a big change. When I first started, really not too many regulations, and then they believe the fishermen were overfishing, so they started all the different regulations, days at sea and sizes and scallop size, meat counts changed and everything. So it's changed. Now we have a new system where it's fished in sectors, and everybody gets a little piece of the pie, and that seems to be. I know the fishermen aren't happy with it, and but it seems to be, you know, a little more stable work, you know, as we work now.
But in general, I mean, is it safe to say, like, compared to 15 years ago or something, it's less fish and fewer people involved in the industry?
Yes, it definitely is less fish available. The workforce has changed up and down at times. You know, we had a winter, maybe 3 or 4 winters ago, that the harbor froze. The outer harbor froze. The boats were getting stuck in Woods Hole. I mean, the boats couldn't get out, and if they went out, they couldn't get back into New Bedford. We were really shut down for like 2 weeks, just nothing. We tried to buy fish elsewhere, but there really wasn't much fish around. It was slow, and everyone in the city suffered from it. The packaging guys, everybody that deals with this end of the business, and you didn't see a lot of that years ago, you know.
Yeah. So. Is there you mentioned all the other, I know there's a lot of associated industries and types of work going on. I mean, there's pretty much a sort of a network on the waterfront where, you know, most people know each other and, you can get what you need and you know who to call.
We've been dealing with one welder for so many years because he's just, you know, does such great work. And if we need some hydraulic work, we have, you know, a guy that does that. I mean, so everybody knows everybody down here. And then it's funny that the workers now, we have Central American workers, and I was asked to photograph one of the workers' wedding. They didn't have any money to pay for a photographer, and I said, okay, sure, you know, no problem. And I couldn't believe that all the people I saw, they were people I saw coming in on my plant from other companies doing work. So they have their own little, you know, community, and they say, hey, there's a job opening here. They make sure that somebody gets it, and they're all related, all kind of cousins or whatever like that. So they have their little networks.
That's interesting. Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, in terms of, do you know roughly how many employees here?
I'd say probably 45.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned some people, Central America, are there sort of a lot of different, a mix of backgrounds and cultures?
We have some people from El Salvador, we have some people from Guatemala, we have some people from Puerto Rico, yeah. You know. But basically, it's mostly Guatemalan.
Yeah. And then what about, you know, older Portuguese families that have been here longer?
I don't have too many employees in that. Maybe a few for the offloading side, but mostly it's the newer people.
Yeah. Are there any language issues? I mean, is that a problem at times?
Most of them understand English. My foremen speak very good English that I have down in the processing area. So there's no really communication barrier. You know, there might be a few workers that don't understand English at all, but they're embarrassed to speak it back. I think they understand it, you know, because when you say something, I think they get it.
They get it, but they don't have confidence,
right.
Maybe,
and right.
And
saying it
speak.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone gets along pretty well.
Yes, I have a great workforce. Yeah,
yeah.
They come in. You don't have to tell them what to do. Years ago, when I first started, you had to do this, do that, and be on their tail all the time. And if you're working late, they all went, "Oh, I gotta go do this, I gotta do that." And all of a sudden, you're down to one or two people. And these people, they come in, they punch in, they know exactly what they're supposed to do. You never hear them say, "I gotta leave early," unless it's, you know, something serious. And they'll do any job. I have a young lady that's been with me for 5 years. She started when she was like 18. She can run a skinning machine, she can pack the fish, she can scale the fish, she can actually cut the fish. She can do every job in my plant. And there are many workers that, when we get really busy, they'll get up on the bench and cut fish and do a good job at it. And years ago, you'd say, "Hey, I want you to do a different type of job. It's not my job," you know? So that has changed.
Huh. The people are maybe more willing to pitch in where they're needed.
Yes. Yeah.
So how involved are you in that part of it, the cutting and everything? I mean, do you supervise that?
I supervise that. So after the fish is purchased, I tell production what to start with, and sometimes it's a crapshoot because we don't know what's really going to sell, but I need to get some product up. So we'll say, "Okay, start cutting the yellowtails," and we'll get going. Then all the salesmen are on the phone, and we start selling all our items, and we keep a tally going. We know exactly how many pounds roughly we're going to have of fillets, let's say, for one item. So if someone sells a fairly large order, like 3 or 4 cases, you'll say, "4 cases gone in that." So we just, you know, keep track of it. And all of a sudden say, "Okay, you know, hold up. Don't do anything else, and make sure all the orders are in," because nothing worse than overselling, and then you don't realize until later in the day. Then the customer that you have to call up and say you don't have it can't find it someplace else. So it's very important to stay on top of that. So after I do that, I will call the floor intercom to call me, and I'll direct them to what product to cut next. I go down, check, you know, make sure the scale's properly set, put a 10-pound weight on it, make sure it's not cheating the customer or giving the customer too much fish. Spot check the product, spot check when the fillet comes off. The skinning machine is very important because you can look at the fillet and see how it's how the skin was taken off, and if it's cut too deep, I'm going to get less of a yield. I'm going to lose money. So you want to make sure that's done. So when we change over that machine, each type of flatfish, cod, whatever we do, different species, it has to be readjusted again. So I go down the. It's so easy because the noise of the skin machine is so distinctive, and it's like when it stops, you know, they're going to change over. So I'll stop what I'm doing, run down to the floor. It's like being on a boat and you're in the bunk and you're sleeping. The engine's got a steady pitch, and if it goes down or revs up real fast, you wake up right away. You know, so it's the same thing with the skin machine. You hear it stop, and you go down there and supervise that. And then we, get the shipping ready to go, and like we had discussed before, and obviously getting the trucks loaded.
So has the machinery gotten more sophisticated, more efficient in recent years?
Or? Not since I've been down here. Back in 1980, Tishon had fish cutting machines and a cutting bench. Those machines are still in use today. They're not new, but they still do. There's some that have computerized measuring systems on it. That's what we have here. But it hasn't really changed a lot.
Is it, I haven't watched that part of the process closely. Is it, Are there safety concerns or stuff that people have to?
No, I very seldom do I ever have a fish cutter that cut himself. You might have someone who maybe ran his toes over with a pallet jack or something like that. But other than that, I mean, it's just very minor. We're very cautious here, and everybody knows their job.
And it's interesting because you your different responsibilities seem to go in pretty different areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you you have sort of a favorite way that you like to spend your time, or is there one aspect of it that you'd rather be doing than another? Or
you mean a different job here?
Yeah.
Well, sales is always fun because you're always talking to the same people every day, and now you have Facebook, so you get to see if their family did something, and you say, that sort of stuff. But selling is probably the easiest part. The part's more enjoyable. Sometimes you have customers that don't pay on time, so you have to call them up. That's kind of a pain in the neck, and they want their fish right away, nice and fresh, but they're not paying me. So that's kind of the downside. But other than that, it's just, get through the day. Before you know it, it's already time to leave. It goes fast.
And so it seems like the interaction with people is a big part of it. It's whether it's, other people who work here or people on the outside.
Yeah.
So you have to be partly an amateur psychiatrist, too.
Yeah, a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
But what I used to always do, I used to always find out what that person was interested in. We all have another life other than being here. So he was a golfer, if I talked to him, or if he likes riding cycles professionally, so I will always try to stay up a little something, every once in a while send a box of golf balls to somebody. I've always done this for all the years I've been down here. If anyone I talk to has a baby, I make sure I get a baby gift to them. So just those things like that helped me bond with the customer. When I first met my wife, a customer of mine in Connecticut asked me to come to a wedding. It was a Greek wedding. Well, I mean, not Greek, an Italian wedding. And it was kind of fun to do, but I couldn't turn it down. I mean, I didn't really know him that well, but he invited me down there, and I said, okay, yeah, I'll be there. So my wife, who at the time was my fiance, and I drove to Connecticut and went to this fancy Italian wedding. Yeah. And so that has made that customer always come to me because he feels that I, out of all the people he invited, I was the one that showed up, So those little things, I think, help bond with the customer.
Yeah, that counts for a lot. I mean, I think in any type of work, if a little bit of a personal connection, so it's not just all business, Show that you care about the person as a person,
Right.
In terms of your, is there any special, there's the machinery and there's different stuff, but is there any special equipment that you use? I mean, I'm guessing that you probably depend on your phone and your computer a lot. But.
I don't know if you want to call it design, I made up a spreadsheet. So I take this, the spreadsheet has columns where I can put the type of fish I'm cutting and the price. Click in over here where the yield is. If I have inventory fillets, I can enter them in and what my inventory price was. So I can get an exact price, very close of where we should be instead of just trying to shoot from the hip and do it. And I also have a boat average one. So if I'm buying from Gloucester, I'm buying this, I can average all the prices together to take that and plug it into my other little spreadsheet.
So this is on the computer?
This is on the computer, yeah. I prefer to have the customers call me at the plant. I mean, I don't like to give them all my cell phones and they call me all weekend long at nighttime. But yeah, we use an Excel. I use that spreadsheet that I did, and then primarily our telephones here at the plant to call, the landlines.
So that spreadsheet is an important way for you to keep track of a lot of details.
Yep. Keeps my costing right there.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you're interested in photography, and that, that has a connection to this industry too. So maybe if you could just talk a little bit about how you got interested in that part of it and sort of documenting this industry and the work.
Well, I started on the docks in 75. I always carried a camera with me. A good friend of mine that I used to go visit once, I was a dentist in town. I knew him. There's a friend, an older gentleman. And he would let me borrow a camera. I really didn't have one at the time. And he passed away. And his wife called me up and said, you know, I want you to come over to the house. So she showed me the box. She said, pick anyone you want. So I saw this Nikon, and I said, oh, yeah, it was a Nikon F. And, you know, a nice, you know, it was like brand new. And that was my first camera. And I used to carry it everywhere I went. And then I slowly, you know, got some different ones. And I really wasn't really focused on documenting anything in particular subject, just more or less just taking pictures of things that I saw. But back in 2008, I was in the Whaler Museum, and I'm looking at their collection of photographs, and there's a photograph of a gentleman with a tie on, a little cap, and he's got overalls, and he's got a trowel in his hand with a brick, and he was doing making a try works on a boat. And it was just a great portrait, and I said, you know, and I'd see the sail makers, everybody's in the sail loft, and they have this photograph, everybody's all dressed up, and this great photo. And I said, you know, two things. I wondered if they dressed up because they knew the photographer was coming, or that's just the way they dressed those days. And I also said, you know, here in the fishing industry, we have the same thing going on. So I approached the Working Waterfront Festival. I talked to Laura Orleans at the time. I told her about this little project I want to do. And I said, it's not going to cost you anything. I just want to go document it, but I'd like to have someone behind me that I can use as a name. So even though I'm very well known down here, I just wanted to have that collaboration with the Waterfront Festival. So she said, sure. And I went around and I started photographing from lumpers to ice house workers to fish cutters to the bookkeepers, the scallop bag makers. I went all, to every little part of the industry. I shot it with a medium format black and white camera because I didn't want to do it digitally then go trying to change everything around. Why, you know, do all that when you can just shoot film? So I did that, and then the Whaler Museum caught wind of it, and in 2009 they took all my images and did a very large presentation. And then fast forward to here we are now with the Archie Green thing. And I enjoy photography. Like I said, I always carry a camera with me. Literally, when I walk from one office to another here, I carry it. But it's been a fun hobby, and hopefully I'll keep going with it.
Now, when you just mentioned your subjects, you mentioned people do different kinds of work, and is it people that you're mostly drawn to?
Yes. I like the portrait. I like the environmental portrait when you're showing someone and doing their job, and they're just with their tools in their hands. I took a photo the other day for our project here, and I was a gentleman caulking a boat. And I don't think many kids are going to know what a fishing boat is, you know, caulking a fishing boat, because that's unheard of now, because they're all steel vessels. And it was on the Shenandoah, the Alabama, one of the two boats from Martha's Vineyard. It was at the famous shipyard. And then, so this is a portrait of the person with his tools in his hand, banging the caulking in. It was great.
So it's interesting that you know, maybe you were inspired some by looking at historic photos, mm-hmm. and seeing these workers from mm-hmm. the past. Why do you think it's important? You mentioned a couple of things, but I mean, it seems like it has documentary value, but it also artistic value. And I mean, why is it important to you?
I don't think of myself as an artist. I mean, some photographers do. I'm just, you know, documenting someone at his job, and we're losing these people. You know, we had our foreman here for many years, got pancreatic cancer, and he went within a month. And his family was so appreciative that they had these professional images of their loved one at his job that he just absolutely loved and did and was so proud of. So that makes me feel good. I mean, that I help a family with that sort of thing, but a lot, you know, we need to document what's going on down here because it's slowly just disappearing, like the whaling days. And I don't think people really realize all the different facets of the job, which this project will illustrate.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that, you know, you have the access. You know, you've worked in this industry, yeah, and you know people in all the different branches, mm-hmm, of it, and that seems like a real, you know, a real contributing factor. You know, that you do have the access and you're known.
Yes.
And
yes. So when I go into a fish plant with a camera, they know that I'm going to not show any bad light. Not that, you know, whatever. Because a lot of plants are very private. So, plus by knowing everyone here, they're more relaxed. For this project here, my work is, I always have a camera going. So they're just like, you know, okay, one more picture. Get it over with. Excuse me.
So they're used to seeing it.
Yes.
So, I should let you go here, but I guess just maybe to finish up, what's the hardest part of the work, the challenges?
The biggest challenge is trying to make a profit. It's you fly by the seat of your pants, you deal with a product that's, you know, has a short shelf life, a shelf life. It's a perishable. So, you know, coordinating that, getting the product in and out, and trying to make a buck at it, that's the main stress, you know.
And we talked about it a little bit, but what do you like most about it? What do you enjoy
The people. The people. From the fishermen to the people in the office here, my workers. I'm very close to my workers. I don't, you know, we treat them like they're family. I told you I shot a wedding for one of the person. I also did a baptism for another one. We had a Mayan festival here in the city, and they all came down and stuff like that. It just, I treat them as family, and Michelle in the office, I've noticed since she's been a kid, you know, now she's a grandmother, you know, so just, it's family. And Mark and Sonny, the guys I work for, are great guys.
Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to add here?
No.
All right, I'll let you get back to work.